Yes, greetings everybody. I'm hoping you're all doing good tonight. I got the recording started here. This is the House of Prayer meeting. This is the 24th day of February, 2022, so they say. If you're new to the calls, they encourage us about every 2 weeks with very few exceptions. Our mission statement is Isaiah 58:6, which says, everyone probably has heard me say it every week now, every 2 weeks now for a bunch of time, and so you know, it's to loose the bands of wickedness, to undo the heavy burden, to let the oppressed go free, and that you break every yoke. Kind of reminds you when I was a kid when we had to go into McDonald's and say their little slogan in order to get a free cheeseburger. But slowing it down, we're here with the attempt to look at what really can help us loose bands of wickedness. Assuming that you believe that bands of wickedness exist, as I do, and some people just start have their head in the clouds, they don't think anything is going on, everything's just fine. Undo the heavy burdens, let the oppressed go free, and break every yoke. So at the start of this, the claimer, rather than disclaimer, the claimer is that we're here for that purpose and to be a ministry of helps as we can, if we can, to those ends. So now, since I've got a claimer to do something new tonight, I'm going to put a disclaimer on this. I just want to let you know that, to the best of my knowledge, no one on this call is in the lawyer craft profession. Nobody here has a bar license. Nobody here has spent years in law school, to the best of my knowledge, except for the school of law that we go by study and reading and attempting to apply lawful principles to our life as, quote, laymen, unquote. No one here is portraying themselves as a lawyer in that lawyer guild. We're, in fact, the exact opposite of a lawyer. One of the members that now we've since for now a year and a half or so, David, he says how to win in court without a liar. I mean, lawyer. Or what, which one is it? I guess he needs to clarify that. So that's my.
I think they're synonymous.
Synonymous. All right. So to the best of my knowledge, nobody here is in the lawyer craft position. Last week, we had an interesting call. We talked about guru magnetism, and that was the first. Guru Magnetism 1. This is Guru Magnetism, Law Guru Magnetism 2 tonight. And we had some great input. We heard from John. We heard from Harold. We heard from Darren. It was a really good call. I can only hope to ascend to last call's quality this evening. And we'll see what happens when we get to the open part of the call. So if you wouldn't mind holding your questions and comments and deeply rooted beliefs, be it religious, spiritual, or even if you get your feelings poked a little bit because something you hear tonight is something that you're doing. And I really don't want anybody to get their feathers ruffled. I want us all to really go to the foundation of our beliefs, of our efficacy as we attempt to do the mission statement in the earth. Loose the band of wickedness, undo the heavy burden, let the oppressed go free, and break every yoke. So all of this is for that end. So we did that last week. This is this week. And next week, I want to remind you that next week, next 2 weeks, it's actually 2 weeks from now, on I believe it's the 10th of March, is the Thursday. Let me double check that looking at my calendar. Yes, it's March 10th. We're going to have a really cool call with some interesting perspectives on the use of the name, how we've used the name. And I believe that we've been making it really town meeting-like on many of our calls. Many of our calls are interactive, not just hearing from somebody in a talking head. So we're going to have – Harold's going to talk about how he's related to the name. He's agreed to that unless he, for some reason, is not able to make it. We talked about this last call. We've got – Darren's going to come on and share how he has participated with and used – and control of name. We have Charlie, who has agreed to come on and speak to how he has related to and used his non-court process, non-judge ordered legal lawful name change, I should say. And I believe David will have something to say about that because he also participates and has a way to address the name issue, as well as myself. And I'm sure there are others on this call tonight that would like to join in the fun. That should be pretty lively. Warning and spoiler alert, all three of the men that I have as guests, if you would, that I'm hoping will come and share just a brief expression in our beginning time for a, just to set us up of how they use a name, they're all different. They're not exactly the same. So nobody teaching you this way is the best way. No one is saying, you know, it's my way or the highway. No one here in this call has ever portrayed, I hope, to be your guru. And at best, we desire to be a ministry of helps to help you and with what we've learned or we've felt we have learned, sought in and pulled out of the tool chest of learnings of life. That's what we're here for. So this is kind of a closing of the subject for a kind of a historical landmark, because after tonight, there will be very few of you that I don't want any of you to be basically getting help to spend quality time with a cellmate in a gray bar hotel. We're hopefully giving you assistance so you can keep yourself away from the gray bar hotel and your sweaty cellmates. So last week I read from 1 Kings, and it was so powerful and on point, I needed to reread it tonight as a foundation. So with no further ado, I'm going to start us off with some Bible reading. I'm going to read to you out of 1 Kings chapter 13, and tonight I'm going to add a narrative so you can understand why I'm using 1 Kings 13 and how it's related to the subject of law guru magnetism. Here we go. Fasten your seatbelt. Behold, there came a man of God out of Judah by the word of the Lord unto Bethel, and Jeroboam stood by the altar to burn incense. And he cried against the altar in the word of the Lord and said, O altar, altar, thus saith the Lord, behold, the child shall be born unto the house of David, Josiah by name. And upon thee shall he offer the priests of the high places that burn incense upon thee, and men's bones shall be burnt upon thee. And he gave a sign the same day, saying, this is the sign which the Lord hath spoken. Behold, the altar shall be rent, and the ashes that are upon it shall be poured out. So, my narrative, we're at verse 3. The prophet told the king that he would know the truth of the matter of what he said up there about Josiah and offering priests that burn incense upon the altar and men's bones being burnt upon that altar. He said, you'll know the truth of the matter by the damage, which he said would happen in the future to the altar that Jeroboam was seemingly working at. Now, one could ask, why was the king working at the altar? You know, a priest's role, according to the scriptures, is not working at the altar. I mean, is working at the altar, but not the king. And, but for brevity's sake, we're not going to enter into that theological debate about why and all that. And that's, I'm not going to speculate. I'll just continue. Verse 4. It came to pass, when King Jeroboam heard the saying of the man of God, which he had cried against the altar in Bethel, he put forth his hands from the altar, saying, lay hold on him. And his hand, which he put forth against him, dried up, so that he could not pull it in again to him. So, that's verse 4. Now, perhaps he told some police nearby, or whatever they called it, the paid henchmen of that day, to grab the prophet, because he dared to speak against the king or the altar, or just because he dared to speak. You know, we've seen stuff like this even in our day. Give that man. And so what it says, going on verse 5, the altar also was rent, and the ashes poured out from the altar according to the sign which the man of God had given by the word of the Lord. So exactly like the prophet said was going to happen, that was the sign. Here this man sitting with a withered hand that he can't pull into himself, and right in front of him, the thing that the prophet said was going to happen actually happens in front of his eyes. The altar was rent, the ashes were poured out from the altar according to the sign which the man of God had given by the word of the Lord. And the king answered and said to the man of God, entreat now the face of the Lord thy God. He's probably saying, I'm begging you, entreat now the face of the Lord thy God and pray for me that my hand might be restored to me again, or something dramatic like that. And so the man of God besought the Lord, and the king's hand was restored to him again, and it became as it was before. You know, now you have it, now you don't, now you have it again. So what we have here is the king had a change of heart when he saw the signs of the rent altar and the ashes being poured out coming to pass. And so when perhaps his pointing finger began to rot,
You're
can't hear me?
Far away. There you go.
No, that's not good. How much did we miss?
None of it. It just sounded far away.
Okay. So what we have is when the king had a change of heart there, when he saw the sign of the rent altar and the ashes coming to pass, and then his finger began to rot and his whole hand in front of his eyes, and he pointed out the prophet to his paid police guards. And he began to beg this man, who's obviously in touch with some other magical and mystical power, God power, go figure, huh? And the king said unto man of God, verse 7, come home with me and refresh thyself, and I'll give you reward. This man just got his hand restored, and he began to operate in equity. He realized his mistake, and as equity does what ought to be done, he wished to reward and bless the man who showed kindness on him when he was just moments before wishing him a cell, or even worse, off with his head. Who knows what they were going to do with him? And the man of God said to the king, he said, this is what the man of God said, if you will give me half of thine house, I will not go in with thee. Can you all hear me? Is my phone goofing up? Hello.
I can hear you.
Can anybody? Okay. Yep. It says, verse 8 says, if you will give me half your house, I will not go in with you. Neither will I eat bread nor drink water in this place. For so was charged me by the word of the Lord, saying, eat no bread, nor drink water, nor turn again by the same way that thou camest. So he's telling the king, I can't go with you. I can't eat bread or drink water here. The word of the Lord came to me, told me not to eat bread, not to drink water, not turn again away by the same way you come. So the prophet refused to be bribed into doing what wasn't in the plans, as he understood them as coming from, quote, the word of the Lord. So I really wish to leave a bookmark in your mind here as to this pattern of bribery which affects us to go against our own word of the Lord. The scriptures states that he that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin. Now, hold on a second. Now, I'm having a problem. David, are you having a hard time hearing me?
Yes.
Well, it might be your phone because everyone else said they could hear me fine. You just sent me a text message and said you couldn't hear me.
I can't hear you either. You're too far from your phone.
Well, that's really funny because I'm actually right upon my phone. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, try just leaving the phone there, not touching it, because I think that's... You might be covering up the mic.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. So I was just trying to leave a bookmark and about this pattern of bribery for in us going against what we know to be the word of God for us. So I just want you to be using this example of this prophet, and he's stalwart. He's got his face like a flint. He says, I can't turn back. This is what I'm led to be, who I'm supposed to be. This is who I am. I can't be anything else. Good place to be, right? But anyway, this king wanted him to do something different than what he was instructed to do, and to him it was a bribery. It was sort of a, you know, come to my house. Well, it would be he'd be bribing him with these dainties of life to go against what was in his heart to do. So I just want you to be reminded that the scripture says that he that knows to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin. It is sin. It's error. It's missing the mark. I want you to also bookmark bribery in getting something for nothing, and that's what the king had offered. The prophet was adamant. He said, even if you offered to split your house and all your belongings, as many wives, as men and women servants, men servants, maid servants, gold, silver, horses, chariots, cannabis patch, who knows? Not happening here, buddy. No way. No how. That wouldn't be Jesus. This prophet was adamant. So it says he went another way, returned not by the way that he came to Bethel. So the story goes, our prophet was true to the known will of God. He left without taking the bribe. Now there dwelt an old prophet in Bethel, and his sons came to him and told him all the works that the man of God had done that day in Bethel. The words which he had spoken unto the king, them also they told their father. Now these sons of the old prophet, they're on Facebook or Twitter or some social media outlet of the day, and they got the news about this prophet and the author and the ashes and the withered hand, they came back and told their technologically illiterate father what the buzz was in town. Or they got on their cell phone or whatever. And their father said to them, what way went he? For his sons had seen the way the man of God went, which came from Judah. And he said to his son, saddle me the ass. So they saddled him the ass, and he rode thereon. Hopefully they put the old prophet on their prized race ass so he could travel at the lightning speed of 3 miles an hour compared to those old worn-out asses that barely go 2 miles an hour. And so they went after the man of God, trudging along on his ass, found him sitting under the oak tree. I embellished right there. Verse 14 doesn't talk about trudging along on his ass. And they went after the man of God, found him sitting under an oak, and he said unto him, are you the man of God that came from Judah? And he said, I am. Then he said to him, come home with me and eat bread. Here's that bride again. And he said, I may not return to you, neither go in with you, nor I'll eat bread or drink water in this place. For it was said to me by the word of the Lord, thou shalt not eat drink bread or drink water there, nor turn again by the way that thou camest. The exact thing he told the other king. It's almost like he had a vain, repetitious prayer. He spoke the same little pat answer, and he wasn't ready for the second test. Then said unto him, verse 18, then the old prophet that was on that ass traveling to meet this new star of the day, he said, I'm a prophet also as thou art. Let me just check my, I got some sound coming through here. I'm gonna mute this out right there. Let me go. I'm an old prophet, as also art thou. And an angel spoke unto me by the word of the Lord, saying, bring him back with thee into thine house, that he may eat bread and drink water. But he lied unto him. I'm not going to speculate to know why he lied or what his motives were there, but this is the operative word of the night. He lied to him. Nowhere in the story we told an angel spoke to the old prophet. The book clearly relates it was a lie. How many things tonight do we hold dear that might actually be a lie? What do lies and gurus have in common, you might ask? Let's get on to the story first. So he went back to him after he was lied to by the old prophet. He said, ah, God said this was the way to do it. Don't follow what you were told before. Listen to me. And by the way, I just want to let you know that my whole life, and this is a public confession, I have always looked at other people and second-guessed myself, like they have it better. And I'm really, as I'm turning the era of a new age, and I'm past my 20s now, and as I'm turning an era of a new age, I find that it might be well to really pay attention to what's going on inside of me and not so much attention by what other people are saying. And we're going to talk about that because that's that word that he was bribed out of. His old prophet came over to him and told him that an angel spoke to me saying, you can do it. Come on back with me. The angel said that you could do this. So he went back to him. He did eat bread in his house, verse 19 says, and drank water. And it came to pass as they sat at table that the word of the Lord came to the prophet that brought him back. Not some fairy tale that an angel said to do this or do that. And he cried to the man of God that came from Judah, saying, thus saith the Lord, for as much as thou hast disobeyed the mouth of the Lord and have not kept the commandment which the Lord thy God has commanded you, but you came back and had eaten bread and drank water in the place of the which the Lord did say to you, eat no bread nor drink no water, your carcass shall not come unto the sepulchre of your fathers. And it came to pass, after he had eaten bread and after he had drunk, he saddled for him the ass, to wit, for the prophet whom he had brought back. And when he was gone, a lion met him by the way and slew him, and his carcass was cast in the way. And the ass stood by it, the lion also stood by the carcass. And behold, men passed by and saw the carcass cast in the way, and the lion standing by the carcass. And they came and told it in the city where the old prophet dwelt. And the story goes on, and you can hear the rest of it when you go and read 1 Kings chapter 3 up to verse 29. But they buried that man. So for a complete spelling out of this story as it relates to today's modern-day law gurus, doing it in crayon here, these law gurus are quite often liars. So the old prophet is the equivalent in the story to many of today's modern so-called gurus of the law. Now, and I won't even exclude myself from the equation. And that's kind of a bizarre thing to say. I don't knowingly, willingly, intentionally deceive everybody or anybody. But I will tell you that if you're not doing your own diligence and you're just listening to me and hanging on your hat because I said it, that's a very dangerous place to be. Because that's what this guy did. He trusted the old prophet that an angel spoke to him, and it cost him his breath. And so we're going to talk about law gurus tonight in a way that's going to be rather uncomfortable, because a lot of what we all endeavor to do in some way, shape, or form has been looked at and viewed upon in today's societal norm as being associated with a movement that has been dubbed sovereign citizens. So I just want you to get uncomfortable a little bit as we talk about gurus that promote things. Here's a quote. It's been written that the worst type of teacher is one who sets him or herself up as the guru of the subject matter and discourages anyone from questioning anything he or she says. A would-be guru most likely has very little to no expert experience using the things that they are teaching. It just reminds me, I remember years ago I was watching a guru. Many people know him. He's gone to prison here not too long ago. But I heard him speak in one of the seminars he was teaching, and he had a lot of good things that I learned, because not all these gurus can't have 95% lies. That's not the way the thing works. And I'm not even saying that all of them were knowing, willing, and intentional liars, like the prophet in this story I read to you appears to have been. Some of these are just, they may be doing it for the buckos. They may be, they just may be deceived and don't know any better. Or they may have been offered a deal by the Department of Justice because they've committed a crime, and the Department of Justice offered them a deal. Just keep on doing what you're doing and don't stop. We're just watching the scene to see who's going to follow you. And you don't know. You really don't know. When you listen to somebody, you really don't know the efficacy of what you're hearing. But this is what this guy said in this seminar. He said, "I don't do these things, but you can." That came out of the lips of the guru, and at that moment in time, I paused what I was watching. I think at that time it was a VCR. That's how long ago I heard him say that, a VCR tape. And I just remember sitting there thinking, what am I doing? My guru that I'm watching, the speaker that's sitting up there doing this presentation, says I don't even do these things. Why am I listening to this guy? So here is your list. In case you're wondering, if you ever want to know what it is that you can reflect on when you're listening to somebody who portrays that they've got a measure of truth and they've got something for you to do, and we're all seeking for the removal of the boot on the neck of us and our neighbors. We don't want to be oppressed. We're lovers of freedom. We want to loose the bands of wickedness, undo the heavy burden, let the oppressed go free, and break every yoke. So consequently, when we see yokes, when we see oppression, when we see let's call them booted thugs doing the things that they do, it works against our peace in our heart. We know that it's not good, and we want to help our neighbor. That's the way, that's the spirit of God within us, and that's the desires of our heart that's put in us. We don't want to see oppression. But here's your list. We don't have don't go in to eat bread and don't drink water and don't go by the way that thou camest necessarily, but we do have a passage out of Philippians 4:8 that can give you the mile markers of what you have to look at when you're in the presence of a potential law guru. Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, honest, just, pure, lovely, of good report, if there be any virtue, if there be any praise, think on these things. Now, that's pretty much all I'm going to say about weighing out the gurus, because we're going to hear later on, and I'm, David isn't going to be interacting with me tonight. He's going to read an article here not too long from now, and you're going to hear things that you know that they're valuable tools. You know that these are valuable, quote-unquote, processes, even though I don't like that word. And you know that these are things that many of us have endeavored to do and maybe are doing and have done successfully as far as remedial work and helping us to overcome commercial oppression and or other types of oppression. So that being said, I just give you some examples of lies. I touched on this maybe briefly, and I know I've talked to some people privately about this, but I want to address this. Here's something that law gurus parrot. And you know you got a law guru because they seem to be wonderful parrots. They can say "Polly Wonka Cracker" really, really well. And one of the things that they say, "Oh, guys, I forgot to do this for you. I almost forgot. I've got it." And I'm talking about being a guru. Before I read or talk to you about this particular thing to do, I was supposed to do this for you. I could be your guru, baby. I can kiss away the pain. All right, that's enough of that. I just had to entertain you just for a second there. Here's one of the things they say. All crimes are commercial. Everyone heard that before? Anyone heard that before? All crimes are commercial, guys. All crimes are commercial. I'm going to stop you a second and say, no, they're not. If I punch your nose right now, there's absolutely nothing commercial about that crime. Whoa, what, the court's making money on us. What, you didn't say that the prosecution and process by which crimes go from indictment, information, or complaint through the sentencing and imprisonment of a prisoner is done without the exchange of coin, but all crimes are not commercial. So let's get into the truth of the matters and think about what we're saying. 27 CFR 72.11 says all crimes are commercial. No, it doesn't. It says this is the definition of commercial crimes, and it goes on to list those crimes that are actually commercial crimes. And if you notice, non-commercial crimes is not in that list. I know I'm making a big deal out of what might be a small thing to you, but these are the kind of things that they add up, and they begin to create a persona built on lies, built on half-truths, mistruths. So remember, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest. I like this other one. You know, there are gurus out there that are going to tell you about territorial jurisdiction. I get it. There's an element to territorial jurisdiction. But there are statutory schemes that identify that in this state actually means that land that is ceded to the United States within the exterior borders of, or the one I'm thinking comes to mind, California. That's in their statutory scheme. In this state, that portion of land within the exterior borders of California ceded to the United States. So see, the statutes are only applied to that land and area. And, you know, there's a partial truth there. So, you know, you're talking about territorial jurisdiction. But how can the state actually prosecute you according to the statutes if you're not actually on that kind of land? Well, what if you're operating in the federal persona? What if you're operating in international character by using a name that was registered in the District of Columbia or with a organization that has their headquarters in District of Columbia, as many states do, at 444 North Capitol Boulevard in the District of Columbia in the Hall of States building where they lease their executive offices, state of, many of them, not all, most of them have it in the Hall of States. Many of them have them around the corner somewhere else. They have headquarter offices in the District of Columbia. What if you're operating with one of those international characters or persons, as the case might be, and then the state has to protect the people and the land from the internationals within their borders? So there's more than one way to look at it. So the guru gives half of the story, doesn't give the complete picture. Maybe he knows, maybe he doesn't. That's not what I'm here to talk about. I'm trying to make this uncomfortable a little bit. Here's one that goes back a long way. Some of you that have been around a while remember this.
Ben Howell versus Dwayne's administrator says,
no, it doesn't. I pulled the case right out of the old law library section in the law library in the old books, and it doesn't say what they said it says. You know, we don't do our diligence, but I can take you to, it won't be hard for me. I can probably, in 20 minutes, get 100 sites that I can take you to where Penn Howard versus Dwayne's administrators is quoted. Well, freedom-loving people, but it's not true. All right, I'm going to go, and I know this is kind of getting to be a rant, and I try to keep these things not really long, and I'm going to do my best to just read one article before I turn it over to David. This is, I'm not going to quote, I'm not going to mention any gurus' names. It's not my job to have a smear campaign against anybody because I don't want to be the judge of whether they're well-meaning or they're deceiving ones. So I'm not going to mention names here tonight. My purpose not to do that tonight. One of the major reasons is because I don't know which one needs to be king of the mountain. And I don't want to be unfair and give the worst guru and put him in second place when he really needed to be in first place, or she, if the case might be. So here's a quote from one of these gurus. The ultimate, I'm going to call him guru. Anytime, instead of putting a name there, I'm just going to give him guru. Quote, the ultimate goal is to be free, to be the king, said guru. This is, and they describe this man, an audience of 20, sat rapt and took notes as Guru spoke. The cost of the attendance was $200. And he goes on to speak, the Guru does. When the bailiff says, all rise, I lean back in my chair and I put my feet off. I'm the boss, end quote. This article goes on to say, Guru is part of a political underground known for unusual courtroom antics. They're called sovereign citizens by the judges and attorneys they antagonize. But they call themselves many names. Free men on the land, natural persons, or in this guru's case, American state nationals. The gist is that a secret body of laws has been hidden from the people. Harnessing it, typically in strangely worded legal filings, but sometimes also in armed confrontations with anyone perceived as a threat, can set you free. And the article goes on to say, the movement is as decentralized as you'd expect from a group that hates being subject to any government. Some sovereigns are tax protesters. Others obsess over capital letters and hyphens in laws. Some sovereigns support do-it-yourself license plates. Others peddle get-out-of-debt hacks. I'm going to go to another article. This one's called American Fringes, the Bizarro English Used by Sovereign Citizens. It's got a footnote here because inscrutable linguistic tricks can't get you out of trouble. Okay, this article is a part of a series exploring the fringes of American life and how they're redefining the mainstream. This is only the first installment of this article. In 1988, a well-known law guru invented his own take on English grammar and syntax, saying it would end all human misunderstanding. But it's gibberish, the article goes on to say. Still, the serial fabulist has left a legacy with the anti-government sovereign citizens movement, which uses his syntax to this day. Few people know much about a well-known law guru's life, in large because he told so many blatantly false stories about himself, like the racist tale of how he once went in for kidney surgery, but a Korean doctor misread his chart, removed both of his kidneys and his adrenal gland, and killed him until he came back to life while cut open on an autopsy table and walked away with a deep understanding of the threat of linguistic misunderstandings. As we really know, all we really know is that he was a machinist from Wisconsin who in the early 1980s had trouble navigating the legal system and wound up convicted. It was nothing more than a cynical process of arcane linguistic maneuvering. He wound up convinced it was nothing more than a cynical process of arcane linguistic maneuvering. But instead of trying to learn to game the system by reading up on law, Guru tried to override it by inventing his own take on the English syntax and grammar in 1988. He called it, and they give it its name. And he styled himself, and they style his name. Now, it goes on, by all rights, Guru's linguistic doodling should have amounted to nothing. He claimed he'd identified a mathematical truth at the root of all human languages and used it to create something no one could ever misunderstand. That would end human conflict through its utter clarity. But it reads like pure gibberish. The Anti-Defamation League, actually, and I don't really like to quote them, but I did part of the article, actually noted in a 2016 report that this type of syntax is mainly identifiable by its virtual unparsability. Yet Guru's syntax took off with a small but influential group, sovereign citizens. Many of these conspiracy theorists elevated him to guru status and shelled out thousands of dollars a head to learn his true English. His name is big, said one researcher who studies the sovereign citizen movement. He is so well known because he's so odd. Sovereign citizens are almost as hard to put down as Guru. Historians have attempted to trace their roots to the Posse Comitatus movement of the 1970s, a group that argued both that white Christians are the only true American citizens and that common law and sheriffs are the only true authorities in the land, meaning the federal government and taxation are illicit. But the sovereign citizen movement quickly developed into a decentralized and less explicitly racially driven phenomenon. Most still believe the feds are illegitimate tyrants who trick us into giving away our freedom, our inherent sovereignty, by signing official documents. But almost every cluster has unique beliefs about when American governance turned malignant and original sovereignty's nature. And that's actually, I would agree with the article here that just about every guru has their own specific historical, it happened this way. No, it happened that way. Or we went off the rails in 1933. No, we went off the rails in 1861. Dude, we were off the rails before the United States was government. Anyway, the arguments galore in the sovereign citizen movement, as it's called, about when the mishap turned de facto, if it was ever legitimate, as David would probably be sitting here saying if he actually wanted to butt in. Okay, the guru's tutorials are opaque and packed with easily disproved claims. Like, for example, that this guru was crowned the king of Hawaii in 1996. Experts estimate there are nearly as many as 300,000 sovereign citizens in the U.S. alone, many of whom are obsessed with finding secret codes or tricks that allow them to break the contracts, quote-unquote, with the federal government, escaping any law or tax they disagree with. Many attempt to do so by employing linguistic gambits dreamed up by gurus that would supposedly override federal trickery, like adding signs under threat, duress, and coercion, or simply TVC after the names. So the complete article goes on in greater detail. I'm telling you, I'm telling you, concerning the grammar and the guru's followers after his death. But it ends with this. In that sense, one could perhaps declare Guridian syntax a limited success. It did not bring about world peace or crack some secret linguistic or legalistic code, as Guru essentially hoped it would. But it sure has vexed lawyers, judges, and other agents of the state as much as they once vexed him. So I'm going to pause now and get a drink of water and let David go on and stir the pot by reading an article, a reference guide by the U.S. Department of Justice, FBI. And this should stir the pot a little more. You don't have to read the whole article, David, but I told you to read as much as you wish. This document is called Sovereign Citizens' Use of Documents to Further Fraudulent Schemes. I do want you to take reference that is one of the problems, that many of what things you might hear in this article David reads may be legitimate and can be legitimately lawfully used. But we should never be using anything to further fraudulent schemes. David, you're on.
Thanks. All right. I just wanted to say before I get started with that is you know, it's interesting because I don't know about anybody else, but I've been called both, you know, to my face and in, you know, police reports that I'm a sovereign citizen. You know, we all know that that is something that they use to label us and put us in a bad light. And that's anybody who questions the status quo. But I thought it was interesting. We found this article, and it is a list, okay, sovereign citizen use of documents to further fraudulent schemes. Okay, they say the following is a list of documents some sovereign citizens misuse or fraudulently create to further criminal schemes. Some sovereign citizens send these forms to public and private recipients to declare they are not subject to U.S. law, attempt to eliminate their mortgages and other debts, and harass and intimidate perceived enemies. Because sovereign citizen schemes tend to change, the list is not exhaustive. There may also be different fraudulent uses for these documents. Misuse of these documents may also be lawful conduct and constitute the exercise of rights guaranteed by the U.S. Constitution. And it's funny because you see the whole first section of this, and again, it's only a short article, about 8 pages, and after the, you know, from this point in the article on, it's just, it goes through and shows forms and documents. And it just so happens there's 2 full pages of IRS forms. And they say that they're, you know, their fraudulent documents are being used fraudulently or misused fraudulently.
Can I throw something in here, David?
Sure.
I honestly think that the article, if you read the context, I believe that the author meant to say use of these documents because of by what he says in the next sentence. But I'm just saying that for your reflection. If you read it with, he just mistakenly put the word misuse in that sentence,
right,
which confused the matter, because if you read it with the word use of these documents may also be lawful conduct, he's excusing it in the next sentence. You can read it. You can see why. Go ahead. I just wanted to throw that out there because
it does read much better as use of these documents.
Right. I believe he may have made a mistake, a grammatical mistake, and put the wrong word in the wrong place, in all fairness. So if you all want to see what we're talking about and you've got internet, you can read it on there. But I just wanted to throw that out there because what he was actually saying is not everything that's in this list means that this is illegitimate things that we can do. And I think that's what we wanted to bring out earlier, David, when we were talking about making sure the clarity here is it's not that everything we're reading about is actually bogus and gets you
right
in trouble, but can I yield?
So one thing I like about it, well, that I like about it, he puts a definition in here, okay, for sovereign citizen. It says sovereign citizens are U.S. citizens who reject their citizenship status and claim they are not subject to government authority. Some may use this self-appointed status to justify threats, violence, theft, and fraud. So I don't know about any of you, but I wouldn't associate myself with somebody that defined that way. And definitely wouldn't want to be categorized as somebody who uses their self-appointed status to justify threats, violence, theft, or fraud. So, anyway, getting back to this, it goes through the IRS forms, legitimate purpose, and then it says how it's misused. Okay, so you got, which one was it that you wanted to talk about? Was it the 1099A?
Yeah, that one people Daniel? Always like to talk about. Yeah, they well, do 56, 1099A. Do just a couple there. Do 456.
Okay. All right. So
3949. Yeah.
Yeah. The legitimate purpose is filed to provide the IRS notice that an individual has created terminated or changed a fiduciary relationship. Okay? That, then it says misuse or fraudulent use, used to provide notice of a change in fiduciary relationship between the individual, a U.S. district court, and sever the relationship between the sovereign citizen and the straw man, sometimes used to designate the U.S. Department of Treasury secretary as a fiduciary. So, again, you know, when misuse or fraudulent use, I mean, it doesn't say that you can't use it to terminate a fiduciary relationship. That's exactly what it's for, based on what it says. So, you know, it's adding to it. I mean, and again, you don't have to, you know, that the Treasury Secretary is a fiduciary or any of these other things. If you're going to use the IRS form to sever a fiduciary relationship, okay, by all means, I mean, you can do that. You're just not going to, you know, if you follow the rules, you'll get done what you want to get done with it. I don't use any IRS forms because I'm not a taxpayer, so it has nothing to do with me. But again, we, you know, I'm going through what they're claiming are, you know, forms that the government has, or in this case, the IRS has, that that people use to do different things. And we've all seen gurus go to jail over the years. If you've been, you know, if you've been at this study for any length of time, you've seen gurus go to jail for playing in the IRS pond. Okay.
Yes, that's actually true, David. In this list, just want to refresh people's memory, is an article from the Department of Justice, Federal Bureau of Investigation. This is what they're saying. Guys, if you want a road that could end up in a cell, do this. This is really what this article is spelling out in crayon. This is a likely occurrence if you use this form this way. This could happen to you. That's it. It's just it's a guidebook. Wouldn't you say, David? I mean, that's what it says to me.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and again, it's nice because you can sit here and look at how it was misused, and, you know, you could probably think of a few gurus who used it this way or misused it this way and ended up in a cage. So, you know, it would definitely be a red flag with a big giant sign on it saying, if you use this way, this is what's going to happen, and you're going to have, you know, your guru friend as a cellmate.
Well, hey, David, nice, but my guru did it, and he's not in jail. So what do you got to say to that?
What is it that you say?
No.
If this, then that?
Yeah, you know, I don't have this and that disease.
And your guru is going to make a few bucks before he finally gets busted.
He's just holding the gate open?
Well, again, I mean, this is where, you know, I don't believe that it's a remedy. You can't claim something as a remedy that isn't consistently able to produce the same result. Right? If you go and you fill out this form and you file for that license, you can guarantee if you fill out the form right and do everything right, you're getting that license, barring anything else. Right?
You've got your legal effect.
Right. You're going to have your legal effect. So, you know, but using these things, using their stuff for your benefit is no different than them using their stuff for their benefit. A lot of these gurus are out there going, well, you can do this, you know. And you know, if I turn around and say that you owe me $1 million because I said so, does that make it a legitimate claim? And that's nothing different than what a lot of these lien placers, gurus, that say, oh, you can lien this one and you can lien that one. $1 million, $10 million, $100 million, it doesn't make a difference. Put $1 trillion, what difference does it make? They're putting these numbers out there and going, you owe it to me. Why? Because I said so. Or because You didn't respond to me in 30 days. It's ridiculous. There's no equity in that.
There's none. And how about the 1040V? I got 1040V.
1040V, the payment voucher, is to help the IRS process filers' payments more accurately and efficiently. And the illegitimate use of it, now when I say illegitimate use, this is, when they put it here, they're putting it up on the illegitimate side because that's somebody who's been prosecuted. And this is what they use. Used an illegitimate payment for tax bills or other legitimate debts. May include the phrase, pay to the U.S. Treasury, and may also be sent to the attention of the Treasury Secretary. A payment voucher. That's the 1040V.
And again, this is the Department of Justice, FBI, telling you, we've put people and prosecuted and have put people in jail for this. This gets people, so illegitimate means they've got standing to bring a claim and make you a Gray Bar Hotel participant over this. Just make
this. And the reason is, you're in that. You're playing in their pond, or I should say pissing in their pond. That's their baby. The IRS is their baby. Okay? This economy is their baby. If they're going to fight to defend a fraud, it's going to be that. And again, you're using their stuff as, you know, I don't use any government forms. We don't use government forms. Again, you would be complying or conforming to their form. And there are just about every government form, there's a penalty clause, you know, a perjury clause. And you're going to end up getting that perjury charge added to whatever other things you're playing around in.
I know that the list is great. Just do two of them, David. Two more. You don't have to read them all. 1099A and 3949A. Sorry.
Okay, you got it. 1099A filed.
Yeah, because you're going to tell us you don't use forms, and I don't want you to trail off. Because you can finish that thought when you get done with these last two, if you wouldn't mind setting the record for the call.
Not a problem. So the 1099A, they say it's used, filed when all or a portion of a commercial loan is forgiven by the lender, e.g. forgiven or foreclosed, 1099A. And it says used to illegitimately set off or attempt to discharge debts. So, and it's just simple. One simple sentence. Used illegitimately to set off or attempt to discharge debts. Okay? Now, from what it says that the use, the acceptable use of that form is, filed when all or a portion of a commercial loan is forgiven by the lender. So the lender has to forgive the loan, right? When we talk about forgiveness. In order to use the 1099A, however, gurus for as long as far back as I can remember have been using it to set off or attempt to set off or discharge any debt they can think of. And again, when I say used to illegitimately set off or attempt to discharge debts, that's what they charged them with. You said 3949A?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, they charged him with it. That's the price that we are paying before we enter, engage, and put the pen to paper. We at least know what the we know how to count the cost. We know what's at stake. Are you able to argue yourself out of a wet paper bag? Are you able to look the courtroom, the judge in the eye and stand behind what you did and fight your way out of it? Do you feel man enough, woman enough to do that? Then engage with these things. I mean, nobody's here is telling you that we're agreeing or disagreeing with anything that we're reading. We're reading this for education, information, and you're going to have to regurgitate what it means to you and digest it.
Yeah, if you are going in there, don't be stuck going, but my guru said this would work, because that's not going to help you any. All right. So we'll do that, 3949A. Filed if an individual suspects a business or other entity has not reported income as required or is otherwise in violation of the tax code. And I've seen people use this, used to fraudulently report that someone, e.g. a judge or law enforcement officer, violated the tax code. So people are using it against judges and against the cops that pulled them over, claiming that they fraudulently didn't report income. Then, you know, so that they can be held accountable under the tax code. I mean, again, 30 years ago, this was being used. And, you know, again, it's one thing if you know for sure that this person made a grip of money on you and hasn't paid taxes on it, you know, and I've seen people get full audits of their IRS file, you know, for their Social Security number, against their Social Security number, and the Social Security Administration, a full forensic accounting, you know, all the cuss-ups that are assigned to them, everything. There are ways to use these things, but be careful. Know what you're doing. Know what you're doing. I mean, what was it, Irwin Schiff? Was it that, I mean, how many times was it Irwin Schiff? Who was the guy that spent all that time in jail for taxes?
Yeah, I wasn't going to mention any gurus' names tonight, but there's a few of them.
Well, the only reason I'm mentioning it is because the guy knows these codes, the IRS codes, backwards and forwards, and they still threw him under the jail. And I believe that he was probably right.
I think that brings your point home as far as having solid remedies that you can actually rely upon. We need to have, when we're addressing the system, we better have solid, explainable, verifiable, and you better be willing to know how to articulate your position, or you're in the wrong place. You need to start spitting on that boot and polishing it with your hair. If you can't articulate your own case and have a solid place to stand on, and if you're relying upon a guru or a form to get you out of a mess, I think that's a mistake. I think that's what we're learning from the story of the old prophet. That's the angel telling it, saying, hey, come sit down and eat over here. That's the bribe. But that's how I'm seeing it anyway, and that's my encouragement to us as a people. I humbly want to recognize what's in front of me. And that goes for everything. I mean, it goes from what we have to check everything. Watch the news that you're getting over the news. I'm not just exclusively making it to law school. If this happens to me tonight, this is the subject we decided to put the magnifying glass on. We should have the magnifying glass on what we ingest as far as our broadcasters or what we think is news. And we should have we should be very careful on. Put a watch on your mouth. It comes out of your mouth. That you're not, you know, cursing your creator and your mother or father, and all that is important. To tonight, we're just talking about this whole scenario where we've watched most of the people throughout our lives get entrapped on the latest guru concept of the day, and I believe that many people. I said it last week, many people fall to these things because of the bribe. The offer of something for nothing is so intriguing in the human nature. To find that shiny quarter on the street that's not yours and bend down and pick it in, inevitably, probably 50%, I'm arbitrarily speaking, look around and see if anyone saw them pick it up to make sure it wasn't anybody else's. They feel a little bit giddy inside that they found a quarter. So there's this drive in our humanity that makes us want to achieve without the work behind it. We know there's scripture about that, about money that comes without any equity behind it, no sweat equity. And in the law, whatsoever is just, honest, a good report, honest weights and measures. Honest weights and measures. I mean, we don't hear that word very often because we're not even dealing with dollars anymore, which was a unit of measurement. Can y'all still hear me?
Yes.
Good. So go on, David. I just jumped on this.
That's all right. I just, you know, one of the things we have to have, we have to be able to figure out what is truth and honest, right? Equitable. And one thing, you know, from the word that I believe is a solid, trusted resource is we're supposed to take our thoughts into captivity. Every thought we're supposed to take into captivity and line it up with the word. So when you're out there doing your legal stuff and dealing with your legal issues and going out there and listening to different teachers teaching about what they've learned and you know, in their studies, if it's study, and, you know, it's usually pretty easy to see, you know, who found a document on the internet and started selling it on Monday. They found it on Friday, started selling it on Monday. Usually they're pretty easy to see through. You know, but some people have studied. They may not understand everything. Nobody, I believe, does. And I think that the law is a monster of confusion that you couldn't get through in 10 lifetimes if you're talking about the opinions of man scribbled into those books. It's a lot easier to pick up that one law book that you know doesn't change and weigh what you're about to do up to that. Where does it line up? And if it doesn't, you may want to think about not proceeding in the line that you're, you know, that you've been sold. Anyway, this goes on from IRS forms to UCC code and filings and liens and other types of claims through the UCC. And I'm just going to read them off. I'm not going to go back through and say what was legitimate and illegitimate. Affidavit of obligation, a commercial lien, amended final contractual notice of demand and settlement for closing of the escrow account, claim of a lien, notice of intent for lien, maritime liens, notice of intent for lien, claim on lien, UCC-1 finance statements, UCC-1 308, all that stuff. And we've seen it, we've read it. And again, it's in their books, it's in their laws, it's in their rules. Sometimes when I read this stuff, I don't know if they even read it. But going down, we get into bonds here, bonded promissory notes, birth bonds, bid bonds, bond for discharge of debt, indemnity bonds, private registered set-off bonds, releases of lien, release of personal property from escrow, other documents relating to real property, allodial titles, and land patents. Now, again, when I'm reading this list, there are legitimate ways to do these things. And if you study the thing, you know, if it's something that you're planning on doing, if you're going to go and do a grant deed, you may want to do some study on grant deeds or counter deed or, you know, trust deed, whatever. If you're going to go out there and use a process or you're thinking about using a process, study that process, study the proper way to use it. You know, if it's something that's legitimate, you'll get your result. You'll get your legal effect. But if you're using it in a way that they have labeled as frivolous, scandalous, vexatious, fraudulent, or whatever, your chances of sitting in a cage because 50 other people before you have, you know, you just want to weigh the costs. All right, going down. Notice of defaults, notice of homestead, quit claim deeds. Now, again, these things are legitimate. They're there. They're tools. Warranty deeds for location. affidavits for this is what they've claimed are misfilings or fictitious filings concerning legal processes. Affidavit of or for truth. Now, they say there's no legitimate corresponding document. Okay? Often sent to law enforcers or state officials in an attempt that court-related actions may contain threats to sue if those actions aren't stopped, may be used in an attempt to declare that an individual is exempt, you know, is separate and exempt from, or is sovereign and exempt from government relation or regulation. Affidavit of truth, affidavit of recording, arrest warrants, court-ordered common law name correction, felony complaint, hold harmless agreements, international law, nationality affidavits, legal notice, and demand. So here it says a method to provide notice that an individual is deficient on a payment or in default. Now, they're saying a contract between a sovereign citizen and the state government providing notice to all state agents that they are liable for violating a sovereign citizen's rights. Now, if a government agent actually violates your rights, beats you, assaults you, threatens you, does something that is a tort, okay, then a notice and demand or notice of intent to sue is legitimate. It's legitimate because we have to provide notice and opportunity, right? That's equitable. Motions to dismiss. Very interesting. And you know, and this hinders us in court a lot of the time. Now, we filed suits, and every stinking lawyer for the other side always files a 12B6 motion to dismiss. Always. Every time. So, a motion to dismiss is obviously used all the time by lawyers, but if you, a pro se litigant, or what they've, you know, called a pro se litigant, or however you address yourself when you're talking to them, you know, if you put in your motion to dismiss, if it has even a semblance of questioning their authority, you're labeled a sovereign citizen and your stuff is thrown out of court. So a lot of this stuff being done wrong has hindered us, all of us, in the long run. And I say the last 30 years of the mistakes we've all made, they've gotten it to a point where they have a list like this, denying legitimate uses of a motion to dismiss or a motion notice of fault or a notion modus removal. You know, these are things that are, you know, legitimate processes, legal processes that they use every day. But if you're not doing it right, then you're making empty threats or creating ridiculous contracts that, you know, conditional acceptance. You conditionally accept this, or you accept this if you do this. You know? Now, it's one thing to do it and not go, well, you're going to pay me $1 million because I said so, and if you don't answer my letter in 30 days, you agree with my with that contract. And that's what a lot of these guys are out there doing. And they keep a light on at the Gray Bar Hotel. True bill of indictment, prison bonds, writ of attachment, writ of execution, apostille, international bills of exchange, notice of dishonor, an opportunity to cure, notice of final determination. And I find it really sad that they put a trust agreement on here. And this is what, and I'm going to read this one. Legitimate says, allows parties to transfer assets between trusts. And then here it says, used as part of debt elimination or foreclosure rescue schemes. So you see the slant that's put on perfectly legitimate processes because people are making mistakes and out there selling these mistakes to others and calling it gospel. So anyway, I'm just going to, the end of this article basically says the federal government has successfully prosecuted sovereign citizen criminals and extremists under the following statutes and codes. Got the max penalty. Excuse me. USC or 18 USC 485, counterfeit coins or bars. 18 USC 486, uttering gold or silver coins. 18 USC 513, counterfeit securities. 18 USC 514, fictitious financial obligations. 18 USC 713.
Carries 25 years. Yeah, it's good. It's good to understand what the maximum penalty that they've successfully prosecuted, and they're claiming 15 years on the first one, 5 years in the second, 10 on the counterfeit securities, 25. It's giving an idea of what they've successfully done, so people understand the cost before they engage in these activities. Go ahead.
Especially that one, that fictitious financial obligations. That's your UCC liens against judges and cops and all that stuff. And I literally just read an article that some guru got 4 lifetimes. So he got charged for fictitious financial obligations. That's 4 lifetimes. That's 12 counts. I believe they think a lifetime is 100 years. So 4 counts would have to be 16 counts of fictitious financial obligations under 514. He got 400 years for filing liens against officials. Anyway, 18 U.S.C. use of likeness of the Great Seal of the United States. 18 U.S.C. 876, mailing threatening communications, 20 years plus a fine. So anybody who's out there claiming that they're going to go and threaten the judge, that they're going to sue the judge while your case is open, or say it in open court, and Daniel spoke on this before, you may be spending some time, 20 years plus a fine, for mailing threatening communications to a judge. 18 U.S.C. 1017, use of a government seal. 1341 mail fraud, 1344 wire fraud, or 44 bank fraud, 1343 wire fraud, 1521 retaliation against a federal judge or federal law enforcement officer, 10 years plus a fine, retaliation. And that they're talking about paper terrorism here, guys. That's what they relate to the sovereign citizen. Okay. 5861, the National Firearms Act violation, 7201, attempt to evade or defeat taxes, 7202, willful failure to collect or pay tax, 7206, filing false tax returns. And interestingly enough, a bunch of that list has to do with taxes. So that's it. Let's see if I can get you the link, if you guys want it. I'll say it slowly. It is MASC.SC/, capital SITE, capital COLLECTION, documents, capital DOCUMENTS/, capital Sovereign_citizen.pdf. And it's just a document. It's called Sovereign Citizen, but it's Sovereign Citizen Use of Documents to Further Fraudulent Schemes, and it's put out by the U.S. Department of Justice, FBI. Put this out. And that's all I've got. Daniel, back to you.
Yes. Thank you so much, David, for this this presentation. And I just want to give heads up. There has been an offer to assist with cartoon making and putting videos out. Nobody here is looking to have a face necessary on the on YouTube. But that offer in this presentation at this time in our world that's spotted with grief and financial woes and trauma that may be coming because of all the handouts that they have been giving out on an economic scale. People may be tempted to do this stuff more than ever to get something for nothing. So I'm hoping that the party that offered, this is like the rock soup here. We put this out there, you add this to it, and we, before we know it, we got a good soup for everyone to eat on because we all put our little piece into it. So this is a good video to go out to YouTube, and I'm absolutely thrilled if the recording of this YouTube was put to a cartoon, and we literally can express this with screenshots of these documents by the U.S. Department of Justice Federal Bureau of Investigation, the document David just read from, Sovereign Citizen Use of Documents to Further Fraudulent Schemes, so that we can be educated, so that we don't get caught in the cage. This is truly loose the band of wickedness, undo the heavy burden, let the oppressed go free and break in every yoke. We've got to understand the cost of doing the things that we do. We have to understand what's happened before us, what the climate is of the day. And really, if you're going to sink your teeth into any project, you better know it like the back of your own hand before you sign on the dotted line. So if we're going to open it up here now for other comments and other participation. But just keep in mind that I said I want to put this out with in a cartoon setting. So if you don't want to be identified by name, don't mention your name, because this may go on YouTube if the offer is taken up. So with that being said, I muted a few people out because of noise. I'll unmute the lines and open it up for comment, for discussion, or your own anger if you really are angry. The floor is open.
When are you going to start the... Okay, go ahead.
No, what did you say?
I was going to say, when are you going to start the discussion on the issue of the name?
That is going to be on the 10th, Harold. We announced that Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah, we announced it in the beginning of the call, too, that we're looking forward to that, and Charlie's going to be on it, yourself. And Darren has agreed to, and he sent me some confirmation emails. We said we would do it in two Thursdays so that we'd give everyone enough time to put together a presentation. I didn't want to put anybody on the spot. And I did announce that, and it's a great chance to re-announce it right now, that the 10th of March, which is 2 weeks from now, Lord willing, we are going to have a broadcast that's specific to how we use the name. And we have three different people that use it three different ways. And, of course, David will have, I'm sure, something to say, as will I, and maybe others as well. If some of the other guys that come and study with us, John and Ed, which I haven't seen on tonight, if they have something to add to the mix, we'll all be blessed. But that's on the 10th of March. That's the next House of Prayer call. And I'm really looking forward to that, Harold.
Okay, just briefly to support what you and Dave has said, it's very, very important to understand what you're putting out there in the public. As many of you may know, I've been at this for 34 years, never been arrested for my legal activities, because there are certain things that I stay away from. And as a matter of policy, I stay away from IRS business, suing judges and the like. You know, when doing my documentation, in the event that I may be trespassing in areas that I may have mistakenly treaded on, my good faith statement, which I've been using for years, basically shows your intent of what you're doing and not intending on defrauding, etc. That goes a long ways. And if I use governmental forms, generally I put a disclaimer with them, or statement that goes behind it that is attached to it, so that the principal and the office holder are clearly defined, which takes the body or dejoin the body from the principal. And recently, in the last few years, about 3 or 4 years, you know, we started to divorce or take the body out of commerce through status correction of the record, which has nothing to do with the man, but the records that are maintained by the state and federal government. And as such, and recently, it has worked very well because my focus is primarily on one half of the two-pronged monster, the name and the person. And I get that clearly, clearly defined by their own works. And they can't answer. I've had about 3 or 4 cases recently just go away, just focusing on those two things, the name and the person. So, yeah, I'll be very interested in the upcoming event on the 10th. Because I believe anything beyond that is going to get you into trouble. Because just about everything done in this present Babylon system is based on a fictional premise. And because of that, any communications with the government, corporations, etc., is putting yourself in a corporate status if you do not disclaim certain presumptions and define your office. And many people, and some of the people that you mentioned, like Irvin Schrift, you know, yes, he knew IRS backward and forward, but he did not understand the status of the person and his office. Nowhere in his works did I see that. And he was voluminous. So, yes, what you and Dave brought forth is on point. Although that article that you read from gives the impression that the government is right and all sovereign citizens, which is an oxymoron, as you well know, are wrong. But those of us who have studied this over the years know that this system of the God of this world that the Lord has given or granted him permission until the return, or until, you know, some people look at that from different views. But the matter of fact is that the God of this world is pretty much in charge of just about all legal systems. And so therefore, if we're going to be in the world, but not of the world, he does give a way to escape so you can maneuver without being attached. And I believe that's the goal for believers, to be able to just make it through and to the end of your term without succumbing to the system. That's my sense.
I agree with you there, Harold, 100%. And you're not going to find it in any other law book out there other than the Bible. Your remedies are there. If that's what you believe, if you believe in God and his kingdom and his righteousness, we have a choice. We're told to get out of Babylon. We're not supposed to play in the Babylonian system, and the Babylonian system is commerce. It is what their system is built on, the law merchants, adversarial courtrooms, constant fighting. We're supposed to be peaceful. We're supposed to be equitable. We're supposed to come with clean hands. We're supposed to operate with clean hands because there's no defense against that, you know. I'm clean, and you can show that by the fruit that you have. Again, you don't need the millions of law books out there to find your remedy. You got one. It's one book. A lot easier to study, too. Sorry, just had to throw that in.
Well, that's fine, David. But in defense of what Harold said, they're even, just so
I agree with Harold that just because this is the way they're being prosecuted doesn't always mean that they're right, because they even say those that sovereign citizens have, there's a group of sovereign citizens, if you read the articles, that have a reliance upon the scriptures. So they'll even call people that say they believe in the Bible a class of sovereign citizens. So I'm agreeing with Harold that's, we're not, none of this conversation was ever meant to say that just because this, that means that it was wrong per se entirely, or that they were not founded upon a trail of evidence that led them to believe the truth of the matter, and it was in written in print and whatever, in black and white, or whatever they did. It's not even relevant to the issue. The issue that I think is brought to here is, first of all, our reputation is worth more than silver or gold, so I would encourage you to avoid being termed a sovereign citizen and never let it come out of your mouth and describe yourself. I would encourage you that. That would be the first thing, that you would speak that which is true, because you're not a free slave. You're not a sovereign slave. You're friends and you're fellow heirs, and you are assemblymen, and you're the children of God, and that's what you are. That's your description. See, what I was hearing, you know, when we deal with this thing about this whole concept of the name and interfacing with government, that the problem that I think most people are missing is they're trying to interface and put that on flatland paper, which does not exist on flatland paper. I don't know if you understand what I mean. A piece of paper is flatland, okay? And a man or woman is not a piece of paper, and he can't go on a piece of paper. Oh, I'm going to put my name and style it this way, and that makes it not a person. Well, no, it doesn't, because the problem is the word parity has to come into your mind. If you're sending a communication to a fiction, that in reference makes you what? A fiction. Parity. You can only communicate between like beings. You've got your computers can communicate with computers in computer language. You're a person in the eyes of the law. That issue of parity, oh, I put my name on the UCC-1 and I put it in upper and lowercase, that makes me the creditor. I mean, I've heard this stuff for 30 years. I'm just tired of the myths, guys. I wanted to get back to that which is sound and true and just and honest and perfect. And, you know, I look for a day when we don't even have to play in that pond at all, the whole pond. I look for the society of the righteous that actually is self-sufficient and are on lands and communities and ecclesiastical groups, and you've got your town meetings, the old-timey thing, you know, that you have proud of where you actually come from, and you're not the city of mixed ideals and trying to make a picture with, you take all the colors and throw it on a board and mix it up and switch it around with your hand, and there you go, there's your work of art. There's no individuality. There's no productivity. Nobody knows how to farm their land, how to raise and be sustained out of the work of their hands. We have to get back to that which is just. Sometimes I might even be tempted to tell you to drop every notion of playing commerce, you know, like David does. I know, but some people can't just do everything. You know, they have a job and they don't know how they take care of their family. I've got compassion in the pastor's heart. So that comes in with, don't do the stupid stuff that will take you away from those little ones in raising and tending your family in the garden and the animals if you keep such. And I guess that's what this is all about. I'm feeling kind of motivated in this environment because I've seen some things with my eyes, the people that I dearly care about, and they've gone down roads here recently in my world, and it's got me of great concern. And my heart is really going out for them because I have seen these types of activities in my life, and I've seen them go horrifyingly wrong, more so than I've ever seen one of them go right. And that's the equation I'm dealing with. You know, I got a Ben Franklin, and I have ting, 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 all these weights on the one side of the Ben Franklin. I look to the other side, and I got a goose egg. I know nobody that has played in some of these things that are being pawned off to the community as righteous and just. I know nobody that has done it. Does that mean to say that it can't be done? No, but I know so many people that have done this very thing you're talking about, and I know where they're staying tonight, if you get my drift. So, you know, as always, I really don't know on all of those things that the gurus are teaching, but I've given you a good standard tonight. When Harold supported it from the underside, David supported it, and the Word of God, we've got a nice sandwich here, a concept for us to pass around to our loved ones and neighbors and, you know, to keep us on the right path as we navigate what's going to become increasingly harder to navigate, I predict. I didn't say I prophesy. You don't need to stone me. It doesn't come to pass. But it looks like things may get increasingly financially into a different state of being. I mean, they're just handing out money like it was, you know, it was printed on tissue paper, which is about what it is. So, guys, I just got on my soapbox. Please forgive me. There's more people out there that want to speak tonight, I'm pretty sure. So I'll shut up and see what the see what happens out here. I'll unmute some people, too. Gosh, it's quiet out there.
I was quiet to let others go through.
No, go right ahead.
Yes. Yeah, it is a fine line when dealing in this world, especially where people are at currently, and most of them are without the knowledge that you have, David has, even I have, you know, and I don't know it all, and I've been at this for like 34 years. And so I try to come in and help with a happy medium until people are come up to speed to the knowledge that they need to have to utilize that, you know, that foreign private trust. Because to get the understanding of trust law, how it is congruent with scriptures, that takes time. Takes years. But what people need right now is something to take them out of joinder with the principal estate. And I believe that can be obtained until such time that they can, like I say, come up to speed with the proper knowledge. And I've seen recently where this has worked. And it kept the authorities off. Now, like I tell the people that I work with, you know, there is coming a time which I believe is almost soon. And when I say soon, it could be 5, 10, 15 years, but soon, where most of everything we're talking about is going to be pretty much eliminated. And it's just going to be brute force. But until that time, we have something to navigate with until we can't keep the boot and the gun out of our face. And that's the position that I'm coming from, because I know just about everything that we're dealing with that is authored by man and his inspiration from Satan is going to be tainted. It's not going to be pure. There's nothing pure created by man, and especially man that is devoid of his creator. And so that's the waters that we find ourselves in without us even asking to be there. We were born into this. This whole system we were born into. We had nothing to do with it, and based on biblical prophecies from my limited understanding, we're not going to change it. So, like the word tells us, to save yourself from this untoward generation is the paramount goal. And all the things that we're talking about tonight is secondary. But in the meantime, like I said, there are measures that I've been using for the last several years that has been working, especially if you can get it in at the inception This is very important. From the inception of the process, once you get past the inception and you're in the mix, it is harder to backtrack or reverse. But if you can get in from the very beginning and you put these certain documents based on their own authority, we don't use the authority for ourselves, but to put the mirror in front of them and say, this is your authority and this is what you're supposed to operate therefrom. And as a result, I've had cases just go away. Nothing else is said. And it's been years. So I don't think in this system there is one way to do it. There can be many or different ways to skin that cat. I digress.
Well, no, you just gave a commercial for next week's call. That was pretty, I love how you did that. It was very smooth. That was nice, Harold. Appreciate that. So we're going to have a good time next week. Who else has got something they want to interject into the mix tonight?
I'm curious about a lot, I guess. we've talked about, being in commerce, so what is commerce? And, I mean, whether you, get Federal Reserve notes, debt notes, through the mail or through a check or through an electronic means, are you in commerce then? If you're using those notes of any kind, and then if you're in commerce, and then are you supposed to be a taxpayer? Then if you don't report it and be a taxpayer, then is it not being unclean to not do what you're supposed to if you're in that system? Same thing with what I heard was, the use of paper. If you put your name down on there, then are you going against Godwards where he does not, however it's stated, I don't know the quote, but he's no respecter of persons. So I'm just from what I'm getting, it seems to me like there's a line. You're either a child of God and do not participate in any of their money system, or you're basically going to be deceitful to either God or the system. I'm not sure. A lot of this confused me as far as a bridge between the two.
Might I try an answer to that?
It's fine with me, Dave.
All right. Okay. Let me try to make it a little bit clearer what I was saying earlier. When I say that debt system, that system of indebtedness, this credit system, now trade, equity, things that have value, right? Your energy and what you're talking about is getting paid in debt notes, right? Federal Reserve notes and participating in that system. I don't see that you taking a $100 bill, a debt note, a Federal Reserve promissory note, and using it to go and buy some food or gas or anything like that. That's not the system. That's a tool in the system. And it's a tool that they are fighting extremely hard to get rid of and digitalizing, because the control, pieces of paper that are out there is not enough control for these people, I guess. But it's the system itself of debt. They've basically utilized the paper that they've created, the paper person, you, and I'm sure this is going to be talked about next week, and created a debt using you as, or that paper as collateral for that debt, basically as a security for that debt. And by doing that, it is created a debt slave, and you, the man, are the surety for that debt, or for that debtor, which is that legal person. And again, separating ourselves from that, I guarantee you, if you were to go and deliver a cord of wood to your neighbor for $200, you're going to take the $200. Or you can decide to trade it for something of equal value to you. The payment that we're accepting, I don't think is a tool, Chad, that has, you know, God's not going to say, well, you used Federal Reserve notes this way. No, nope, you got to go to hell. That doesn't work like that. It's not. You're not sinning by using Federal Reserve notes. Again, you can accept it because the value is in trading them for something of actual value. That's not what I mean by commerce. Commerce is we are being traded as chattel property, okay? And we're not property of government. Although they have taken the liberty, ours, of claiming that we are. And this is why, I mean, I was talking to Daniel the other day. I mean, a very simple declaratory action. Am I God's property or am I the government's property? That's the one question I really want to answer to. Am I
I was going to interject a quick question. How can the created be ruled over the creator? That's what they're doing.
Say that
they
again.
Say government. How can the created rule over the creator?
Oh, absolutely.
Government was created by the people. How can the government control or own the people without consent? Unfortunately, most of us. Go ahead.
Interestingly enough, the adversary thought the exact same thing. Right? And that's why this system is modeled the way that it is today. Right?
No question.
We created a monster that ended, well, I'm not including myself, and I'm not saying we because I don't have that mouse in my pocket, but people, men, and most likely it was men, created a monster, and it ended up ruling everybody. And, you know, they literally did it to play God. They did it to play God. That's what the adversary wanted to be. He wanted to be God. Well,
like
why not
time.
Have a system? It is God, right? You said it earlier, Harold. The this system is his system. He is the ruler of this world, right?
Yep.
That's what he set up. But we're not supposed to take part in it. That's where I think Chad was going. Taking part in the system, being in the world and not of the world. If we know who created us and whose we are, it's going to be real hard for them to justify. And that's why I go back to the question, am I God's property or am I government's property? And if you claim that I'm government's property, then I really need to see all that evidence right here, right now, of how I became that. Otherwise, you need to let my, let me go. Show me the door.
And when you look at it on those simplistic terms, even the way I look at certain things on simplistic terms, based on those types of questions, you don't need a ton of law books.
You don't need any law books. You need one law book, and it's got all the evidence you need.
There you go.
Right? I claim I'm a citizen of heaven, my law book says that. If my law book says there's one lawgiver and one judge, who are you to judge your neighbor? He isn't talking to, he's not talking to himself there.
And when I put that in their face, they can't answer.
Well, of course not. Because if they say, well, I'm your judge, they're claiming to be God over you. That's a fraud in itself, on its face, and it's very simply put. Anybody standing there could see it plainly. And there's no way that they can justify, based on their own rules, they have to take judicial notice. They have to, mandatory judicial notice of that Bible. And if you know what's in it, you can use that to remedy yourself out of just about any situation in the world. Because you're not of the world. They can only rule over volunteers. Equity doesn't aid a volunteer.
Correct.
And everybody out there that is putting themselves and subjecting themselves to the system are doing it voluntarily. And we'll say, well, they don't give us a choice. Well, I'll tell you what, right this second, I got no gun to my head.
Well, there, that's a fiery bolt. Sorry, Harold, I was just going to say that's a fiery bunch of information for everybody to ingest. So, in all fairness, this is one of the most needed conversations, and it moves right towards, these questions that are going to be really brought up in great detail on the March 10th call. I just wanted to, we did discuss earlier, David, we did have a part two, and this goes to the subject matter of doing things that can provide at the present moment, relief to people. And David had thought it would be a good idea, and I am comprehensive that it's a great idea. The writ of prohibition, if you know anybody that's ever used one successfully and had a legal effect, David and I are creating a library, and we'd like to know about it. We'd like you to contact David or myself. I'm going to give my email address. I'm going to give his or both. And it's what he gives to me, and we have to share it. But it'd be nice. It's afreemaninbabylon@gmail.com. That's David, once again, afreemaninbabylon@gmail.com. And this is Daniel's email address. It's I am Daniel Joseph, IamDanielJosephProtonMail.com. I am Daniel Joseph at ProtonMail.com. So that way we can, if you'd be so kind to do so, to offer information on if you've ever successfully used the writ of prohibition. Now, I just want to do a small little blurb here because of the things that we've been looking at and why we think it's relevant to our community. It goes like this. Prohibition is used in the absence of all jurisdiction. A prohibition is a original writ that is created in an appellate division above you, above the court, if you happen to find yourself in such a predicament. A writ of prohibition would be the remedy that if you had a judge or an administrative law judge or someone claiming to be a judge acts in a way which you know to be inflammatory and biased and prejudiced, and you can't have confidence and trust in him because of A, B, C, D, E, and you've got that understanding, and you try to disqualify, and he becomes a judge in his own affair, and you do everything that would to get this man to step down because of his obvious bias and prejudice and activity, which anybody that would be walking in and all your witnesses agree, this is really the way he's treating you is you haven't even started, and you feel like he's attacking you. You've got an enemy up there on the bench. And so you can do a writ of prohibition at the appellate court and if he doesn't step down. And so people need to know what happens when they move for recusal and they don't get the judge to recuse. One of your next steps that you may can comprehend that is a tool in the tool chest. It's if you're playing poker, that's a poker rule. You can use the writ of prohibition, and that is a lawful, it'd be on the left side of the column
of lawful uses of writ of prohibition, the legal way of using it, that is within the structure. So we're looking for writs of prohibition along with the appendix that goes along with it, examples. If you know of any that successfully used such a writ and have such in your file that was successful, it does it in one of the so-called states of the United States, in the area called America. We're talking about not a foreign writ, because there are other areas that use these processes. So that's the commercial. Writ of prohibition is there to prohibit a court from doing something that it's not supposed to be doing in the absence of its jurisdiction, and to move on from that court. You have no remedy there, because to move on would be to prejudice you in that case. So if the judge was a judge in his own behalf and denied your demand for his recusal, when whatever provision you used under your local rules, if you happen to find yourself in court, you can use a writ of prohibition to the appellate court with original action. And if they find that you have substance, they will issue a show cause, and that the one who is the respondent there would have to show cause why this not be the case. So you have an original action. And there are other uses for the writ. So understanding that a mandamus is something someone they're required to do, it's a mandate, and a prohibition is prohibiting from them from something they're not supposed to do in the absence of their jurisdiction. So there's my little commercial. There's a little teaching there besides, my request to the community at large. Go ahead.
Just so you know, I mean, if you just read it simply, it's a way to prohibit a court that you're standing in front of from exercising jurisdiction that it doesn't have, okay? And a lot of us know that without jurisdiction, the court can't hear a case in the first place. They don't have the authority to hear the case, which is why we challenge that jurisdiction. So starting from get-go, if you can bring in all your proof that you are not under their jurisdiction, under their authority, and the judge just railroads over everything you say, I don't care about your objections, I don't care about your evidence, I don't care about anything that you say, and just runs you over and goes, you know, forward without even, you know, as if you said nothing or had no evidence. You can use this writ of prohibition to basically go over their head. A lot of states, it goes directly to the Supreme Court to be heard. Like Hawaii, it does that. Florida, it's different. The appellate court that's over the lower court that you're in, directly above, that's where you would file that writ. And again, you need to look at your rules in your state if you plan on using it. But I do. It is an original action, like Daniel said, which basically means it is an offensive move. You're bringing a new claim. You're saying, hey, this guy's acting without jurisdiction. You need to put a stop to it, because obviously he's off the reservation. But we want to see some examples. Yeah, we're looking for some examples that have been successful, that these writs that have been granted, and how they were prepared. And again, it's an old tool. This is, you know, it's common law writs that have been brought into this system, and they can be effective. But I'll tell you what, it's like pulling teeth, from a crocodile, trying to get these things out of their hands, because they know they know what we're using it.
Yeah, they even admit that they're very uncertain how to use this tool because of lack of use when you read about them. I wanted to give just a really bizarre out there example so that you can understand, and then you can extrapolate the other jurisdictional issues that you know of in your own matters. When you're challenging jurisdiction with this writ of prohibition, like David was saying. So here's an example. Let's say somebody you know is being sued for a contract violation. He didn't pay
his contractor, and he's sued for a contract violation, and he's supposed to show up to the tax court to answer this lawsuit, this civil lawsuit. And so this is an extreme. I'm painting in crayon so that you can see there's obviously no jurisdiction for a tax court to be entertaining a civil action that belongs in the circuit court. It doesn't have any authority. It doesn't have, it's not the railroad tracks that it rolls upon. That is, that particular statutory function is not statutorily for hearing civil matters between personal matters in the county. It's set up specifically for tax matters. So if your judge started hearing the case and you motion for dismiss because the court doesn't have your subject matter jurisdiction over divorces, and the judge just overruled your motion, are you forced to have to sit there and wait until you go through the painful process of spending all your energy on appeal and wait for the next judge you wanted to try to comprehend after you had to go to court by under threat of this, possibly warrant or contempt? Or do you have the ability to stop right there and interlocutory and put a writ of prohibition to the appellate court in that process, which is an original action, with as much of the record that you need to prove your case, prohibiting the court from going on in the complete and absolute lack of jurisdiction? And as you should know, that is also reviewable by the next court above it. And that's your basic law lesson for the comprehension of the writ of prohibition. And like I said, you can expand the jurisdictional issues to encompass all of our cases, our children as gifts from God, as we're the heir and the beneficiary at the same time of these gifts from God. We're the trustee to take care of our children, and therefore we have original and exclusive and superior jurisdiction to than any corporate entity claiming to have some administrative stewardship rights over title, is which they deal with, is purely title. You know, a good example of that is, I don't want to digress into another way, but that's what they're, oh, guys, it's been a great night. I'm just going to keep on pausing because I'm rattling on. I feel like I'm giving the open forum no reason to talk, so I'm going to pause here. That's a long pause.
I have a question.
We like questions. Who's it directed to?
Whoever feels that they're best to, in regards to this writ of prohibition, this is Angie.
Can you get closer to the microphone, please? That might have been too close. I can't hear anything.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. I had my ear, but I apologize. So in my situation right now with things, would a writ of prohibition be the next step for me in going, taking that to the North Dakota Supreme Court when this judge just totally ignored everything and my motion for contempt in December and then told me I can't file again?
Well, I tell you what, why don't we reserve that question for, I believe we have a call tomorrow set up, and that would be of a private nature for the call. And we have that set up, and that would be a great way to address that. We'll do that there.
Okay.
Since it is a private and personal nature. That would be super if we could do that. But otherwise, thank you for the input in speaking on the House Prayer Call. Welcome.
Thank you.
You are welcome.
Yeah, I've done the prohibition and mandamus. Unfortunately, I was not successful. And it was in Florida, and Florida is pretty rough. And the judges and lawyers band together oftentimes. So, but the premise, if I was to, and I did that, I think around 2014 or 15. If I use the process now based on what we know to date, it would be pretty hard for the higher court to get around it, especially on jurisdictional issues. I
was going to throw this out to you, and this has been my observation. What's been really interesting is that when it gets to that higher court level, they're demanding a level of comprehension, study, and observance of details that's like a collegiate level document. What I'm saying is that we've noticed that the rules surrounding the way they will hear and the way they will just automatically disregard these superior writs are very, very strict and time-consuming to strain that net. I'm describing my specifically observance into the rules what you just described in Florida. I will agree to you that they are arduous to read through and try to extrapolate. Now, exactly what do they mean by this appendix, and exactly – oh, you got to footnote these. Oh, you got to bookmark these things in the document, and oh, it's got to be this font, and you can't be have. You have to have a certificate of pages or a certificate of good faith attached to it, and blah 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 blah. So yeah, rules out the wazoo for writ of prohibition. That being said, that's why requests were made for successful ones, so that we obviously know that there's a very likely chance that it was according to the rules because it wasn't rejected. So we have a good chance of that. And so we have found some cases online with case numbers on it, and that is a possibility, but I thought we'd put it out here before we wait for the mail. If I think it is a tool.
Yeah. What I've done over the years, when you find successful cases, you can actually order the documents.
Right,
and that way you can get
step.
A quick yes. Yeah, it saves a lot of time.
I thought that maybe, yeah, it does, and I have that in my repertoire to do. It's this particular aspect right now is a hope, and my call volume went down tonight than when it started with, so maybe the subject matter was not so happy for some of our listeners. So. Right now, I thought it was a great call. I was happy to have it. And if anybody feels discouraged about the phone call, I really apologize. I don't believe it was any nature of mine or David's and then the participating parties at Harold's participation. So have anybody be discouraged or in any way have the wind taken out of their sail by these conversations, by all means, we need to push forward and provide our families and our loved ones with tools for their survival, whether we try to develop a counterculture that is self-sufficient on the land or whether we decide that we're going to stay in the suburbs or whether we are just city-bound and we have hope in our hearts that our city will not become a zone where you're easily controlled and penned in, easily caged. So wherever you decide to be, we want you to have success.
Having a hard time hearing you, Dan. I'm muffled.
Wherever you decide to be, we want the people here. I'm giving them a benediction. I'm giving them a closure here. And I want the people to be successful. And whether they decide to live in the city, in the country, in the suburbs, there's going to be different challenges to all of those decisions. Some of the closer living to government is going to get you in more contact with them. Some of the further away from you are from government, you have to have a reliance upon the abilities that you probably have. Many of you have never practiced before in surviving on your own. And so the benediction to this call is if there's no further questions or comments that need to be made tonight, I hope that the message was an encouragement to you because that was an intention. That was the intention here tonight. So silence will be acquiescence to end the call. And I thought it was a fantastic encouragement. I hope to have it on YouTube for the body's use and encouragement in this environment we live in. Maybe we can edit out all those times I wasn't heard right, my new phone. So be blessed, be well. I'll see you on the 10th of March at this wonderful same use of the free conference call HD, same place. And I'll see you on the 10th with the Name Game
show coming up. Thank you.
Okay. The Article I courts do not have jurisdiction over the living. Article 3 may, but we don't have. Well, here's some background.
Daniel, you're erasing the previous recording.
No, I'm not.
No, he had already stopped that.
Yep.
He started a new one.
Yeah, but he... Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Hold on. Call back in.